Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Ayler's gone! Come on, touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple, I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Grateful to have you along. Hope you're having a great day and a good start to your week on this Tuesday. What a beautiful day it looks like it's going to be out there. Finally, some just solid spring weather. It's not like we haven't had any, but it's been a weird May. It was a weird May. It was just cold and rainy most of the time, but here we are. We're upon it, and things keep going, man. The summer schedule rolls on. The Indiana All-Stars has come and gone. Now we look towards the grassroots basketball camps as they'll get going all summer long with the AAU circuit. More team camps coming up for schools like Indiana as they'll have a team camp this weekend as well. Football recruiting nonstop. It is rolling on. They continue Indiana football, as a matter of fact, I think up to 12 commitments now. We'll talk about the two latest as they pick up a couple of nice ones in a wide receiver and a tight end as they continue to bolster their roster going forward. Kurt Cignetti and crew doing a great job. We'll talk about Fernando Mendoza is heading to the Manning Passing Academy, which is a big deal if you follow college football. This is a yearly deal where the Mannings have this passing academy, and it's an invitation only type of situation. This weekend, Indiana basketball was watching a couple guys. They handed out an offer. Also watched Noah Washington for the first time, the young sensation from New Albany, Indiana down there. I think the kid's like, I think he's a 6'5 guard right now, but there's obviously a lot of talent. And a lot of eyes will be watching, staying upon him. And the house settlement has been okayed, signed off by the judge. We'll talk with Mike DeCourcy about that and what all that, the impact that that's going to have on college athletics, because they've been waiting to get this done for quite some time. This will, this has paved the way for schools to pay athletes directly. Schools are now free to begin paying athletes directly, marking the dawn of a new era in college sports, brought about by multi-billion-dollar legal settlement that was formally approved on Friday. And I mean, this is the dawn of a new era as far as the schools are going to be actually doing it, but what's the difference? I mean, they were getting paid before by the collectives that were representing the school. So, and don't forget, welcome to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. I've got my sweet mask, bourbon, and rye shirt on today. Love that. But make sure you stop by the folks at Hard Truth Distilling Company. They're in Nashville, Indiana, or you can pick up some of the fine product in most of the places where you live. It is the goods, baby. It's amazing what they have done. I've talked about it a lot, but what they have accomplished in such a short time, it's mind-boggling, actually. But what a great place to stop by. Gritty says, awesome. Dr. Yeagley Montgomery, McCracken zoologist, is on today. I guess that is not... I guess I missed the joke there, but appreciate everybody joining us no matter where or how you're listening on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call, in Evansville, covering the southwest portion of the state, up in the region on The Voice of the Region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked right where you have it. You're in the right spot. And for those of you that follow along on social media, make sure you have locked it in with a, just subscribe to, hit the subscription and more importantly, the like button so you don't ever miss a thing. And if you truly want to keep up with IU athletics, if you're an IU fan, please get yourself a subscription to thehoosier.com right now while they have this great special, just $1 for the first month, 50% off the, first year, but there was five new stories that went out yesterday. Well, there's more than that, I guess. It's hard to keep up with how many stories are coming out on a daily basis, but right now you've got the Indiana post-spring position preview on the offensive line, which we'll touch on, and Indiana basketball recruiting roundup. This is a critical month of June, and we'll talk more about this on Friday when Alec Lasley joins us, but It's a huge, huge month. But you heard me mention Indiana football getting some added pieces. Well, they added 2026 recruiting to the 2026 recruiting class, a commitment from East St. Louis wide receiver Cortez Rupert. Rupert's pledge marks the second commitment for the Hoosiers in as many days over the weekend, as a strong June recruiting stretch begins under Kurt Stignetti. He's a 6'1", 160-pound junior, announced his decision via social media following a recent official visit to Bloomington, becomes just the 12th member of the Indiana 2026 recruiting class. He's, like I said, from East St. Louis, coming off of a breakout season, finishing his junior campaign with 24 touch catches for 660 yards, 8 touchdowns. He has explosive speed and also contributed as a return specialist on kickoffs and punts. So could be someone you looking for there. He's on three, rates him as an on three prospect, number 22 overall in the entire state of Illinois. So that's pretty damn good. You consider the Chicago and that, all of that area. So gives Indiana a playmaker type. Rupert's decision follows the commitment of P.J. McFarland, a tight end, on the previous day, which followed the commitment of offensive lineman Kenton Mondu. So they're adding all kinds of good pieces, perfect pieces, mixing it in. But P.J. McFarland, he's from Lakota East, Ohio. And they're also getting a lot of guys from Ohio, I've noticed, a great football state. But McFarland's a 6'5", 205-pounder with offers. Dude had offers from Miami, Illinois, Michigan State, Kentucky, Northwestern, Missouri, Minnesota, others. Indiana wins out over all of those schools. As a junior, he finished with 40 catches for 568 yards and 8 touchdowns. So, they're adding some just good pitchers, adding some good pieces to this recruiting class as they move forward. And it's what you got to do. Hope everybody is doing well. Yes, congratulations, Mr. Fulton Mraz, again, getting second place in his silver medal and in the 100-meter dash, and he got third place bronze. So congratulations to him. We all appreciate you, brother, and congratulate you. Salute you for all that you've done. Gritty says the visor is great with Sidney Parrish and Jeremy Gray. It is funny. Oh, I think that's supposed to be video. There we go. Yeah, Jeremy Gray joining us on the program today. Also, Mike DeCourcy, of course. But Looking forward to talking to Jeremy about Tatanka, the Bison. The Bison appears to be back. If you have not seen the videos out there, we'll get more in depth with that when Jeremy joins us a little later on in the show today. But yeah, Tatanka. Maybe they should make a video, Tatanka. And that is the Lakota word for, it's the Lakota word for buffalo, which there is no such thing as a, it's the American buffalo, but it's only, it's just like the word Indian. The Native Americans were called Indians originally because they thought they're in India. So there's no, it's a bison. It's not a buffalo, but it was misnamed like way back in the 1700s, I think maybe. And then, or 1600s, and then quickly they started calling it bison, but I guess the Native Americans had already started doing that. Bison back ribs, you know, hey, it's going to be, yeah, not going to want to have a lot of promotions promoting buffalo now, but although, like I said yesterday, love my buffalo burger, man. Who's Columbus? Columbus was horribly lost. Oh, Columbus. Oh, Christopher Columbus. Yes, he didn't know. Well, how would you know where the hell you're going back then? Man, you just hit water or hit land, you're great. But you would have thought that he would have known it took it a hell of a lot longer. Or he could have got to India in a lot shorter time of the year. Indiana baseball commit. For a pit or for Indiana baseball commit pitcher, Matthew Fisher has been named the 2024 Gatorade Indiana Baseball Player of the Year. Gatorade announced Tuesday afternoon. So that's a great pickup by the Hoosiers. The award recognizes not only athletic excellence, but also high standards of academic achievement and exemplary character off of the field. Congratulations. He's a senior at Evansville Memorial High School. Put together a dominant season on the mound. Ooh, big 6'3", 6-0, the 0.76 ERA, striking out 61 batters, just 11 walks. Sounds like a nice, good pitcher coming to Indiana. I also saw yesterday Indiana, the transfer portal rankings, as a matter of fact, if I can get over to that. But, Indiana ranked, I believe it was 7th in what I saw in the transfer portal college basketball rankings. Yeah, by ESPN. Number one was St. John's, Rick Pitino, doing what he do. But we'll talk a little bit more about this later. Kentucky's up there, Michigan, Louisville, Florida. Mike DeCourcy will join us on the program next from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday. And as usual, that means a visit from our good friend Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Big Ten Network, and Fox Networks. How are you doing this week, sir?
I'm doing all right, Jim. How are you?
Cannot complain. If I was any better, I'd be Mike DeCourcy, but I'm not. So there's that. But I guess big news in the fact that the House settlement has finally been signed. This was like a divorce. It drug out and drug out, and it seems like it took forever. And but they were finally able to get this done, which. It's big news for college athletics because it does change. It's a major shift now in the longtime setup of amateur athletics, which now these guys will be paid directly by the schools, which I don't know how much that matters because they were getting paid anyway and through the collectives, which were tied to the schools. But this is probably a better way to do it, to be honest with you, but the collectives are still involved. So, and the collectives not involved with the side of the house case, but there's still NIL money out there that'll be happening. And that is still going to differentiate programs, I would assume, Mike. I mean, the Ohio States of the world and all that, who has a much bigger pot of gold under their rainbow.
The complicated aspect of this, Jim, is that for the first year, because the settlement, we're almost to July, and a settlement didn't get finalized until last Friday. So it goes into place effectively on July 1st, which is when, if I were a defensive tackle, I could get my first paycheck from whatever D1 school I'm at. So that's it. So that aspect of it goes into place. But because it wasn't settled earlier, most schools, especially in the highest profile sports, the ones we talk about the most, football and men's basketball, were arranging handsome NIL deals through the collective concept all the way up until, probably Friday morning. We probably still had some being signed. So those will all be in place for 2025, 26, and no one can do anything about them. There is nothing that the new enforcement arm between Deloitte and the new person that was installed as in charge of this enforcement concept, they can't do anything about 25, 26. And then we don't know what the approach will be. We suspect that they will be aggressive against the collective concept. That if you're Cooper Flagg, and I saw a figure that said between Gatorade and State Farm, I believe it's New Balance, any of the other arrangements that Cooper Flagg had for the 2024-25 academic year basketball season, that he made something like $22 million in that. If there's another Cooper Flagg, Juju Watkins, who's now at USC, who has a deal with State Farm and some other elements, she can make as much as she can make in those arrangements, those contracts, endorsement deals. That they're not going to interfere with that. They interfere with that, and this whole thing collapses. They can't interfere with that. The question is, what will the approach be toward the collective concept? As I said, the expectation is that they will shut it down, that they will not approve Kansas State's acquisition of PJ Haggerty in the way that it was done. Nothing illegal or untoward about it, just it was 2025. What will it be like in 2026? As I said, the expectation is that will not be approved, that concept, the collective concept. If it isn't, then I think we're going to wind up back in court with that being challenged. I asked an attorney and never got an answer about, there has to be an incident, so to speak, before you can complain about it. Like, you can't say, I'm not getting my NIL money until you haven't gotten your NIL money. So you can't sue over it until that happens. So we won't see any, other than what's already out there, we won't see any court action related to this case until something actually happens that denies income to athletes that could have gotten it. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm curious how they will handle it. Because I think if they fight this concept unless and until they have congressional intervention, if they fight this concept, I think they're just going to wind up back in court and lose again.
Yeah, because I don't think NIL is not going away.
No, I mean, like I said, there are two different elements of it, though. I mean, the one is definitely not going away. The Juju Watkins, Cooper Flagg element, not going anywhere. But the amount of money that's being presented to athletes now, I mean, it's hard to call it, in terms of the endorsement marketplace, it's hard to call that fair market value, or customary market value. You're not like PJ Haggerty is not someone that whose endorsement would be worth $2 million or $1.5 million or whatever he's getting there. It's not, I mean, he's a great player, but he's not someone who is so well known that his endorsement would be valued at that level.
But is the problem going to be trying to determine is, well, use Cooper Flagg as the example. Well, his value probably is worth what he's getting. And although it is much higher than the average other player, it's not a precedent, but it you can't take that away, like you said, because
right.
He's worth it and it's there. So I guess that's just going to maybe skew the fair market value for other things. I don't know. That's why.
No, I think the problem, Jim, is that what we've seen over the course of the last 2-3 years is this collective concept. And I'm not complaining about it. I'm just trying to explain what's existed. The collective concept has been presenting dollar figures to athletes based on the desires and interests of the fan bases, the wealthier elements of the fan bases at particular universities. I saw a story over the weekend. There was a softball pitcher at Texas Tech who was paid over $1 million to play for the Red Raiders softball team that made the women's college World Series final. That was really an athletic ability concept, not a endorsement, name, image, and likeness value that she got $1 million for. And again, I want to make it clear, I am not in opposition to that, but I'm not the person who's going to be in charge of enforcing this new concept. They may be, and most expect they will be, because that's what they're trying to control. They don't like what it's become, so they're trying to control it. And this settlement gives them the opportunity to control it. The question again is, okay, this is what Judge Wilkin approved, but will the next judge or the Supreme Court or whoever it gets to approve it? And it can't be challenged until somebody loses money. But the moment somebody does, I think it will be.
Andy says you're also going to see the old under the table system creep back in. Now, by that, I can see that if something was deemed out of the realm of what is fair market, then they will find a way to funnel it in a different way.
I've seen that a lot, Jim. I've seen that from others as well. And I don't believe that's true. As I said, the moment somebody's NIL deal, old-fashioned NIL, I know it's only been a couple of years, right? But the old-fashioned NIL, the moment somebody's is disapproved, I think they'll go to court rather than start breaking the rules and damage a court case. I think they'll go to court, and I don't think they'll lose because if you start to take away things that people have already had, for no apparent reason, that usually is a loser. And there is
no true market value set, to be honest with you right now. Who knows what the market value is?
Well, the market value of your endorsement is one thing. The market value of your athletic performance is another. And it's easy to argue that if I am worth $4 million, or let's use the softball pitcher because we know the figure was reported. If I'm a softball pitcher and my market value to be a softball player for Texas Tech is $1 million, then if indeed she has more eligibility left, I don't know if she did, but if she did, then it would be a factor of losing money that she's already been capable of earning. And again, she's not earning that money because she's doing commercials for an insurance company or an athletic apparel company. She's earning that money through the collective that was funded by people who wanted Texas Tech softball to be great. And they were.
Yeah, and so it's going to be amazing. Is I think for people when they see certain athletes in sports that are not revenue generating sports per se, was it Olivia Dunn? Is that the LSU gymnast?
Yes,
killing it.
Again,
half of America has no idea who the hell she is, but yet she is just killing it, or was killing it in the NIL. And again, I don't know why would a gymnast at LSU bring in such a big market?
Well, again, she falls into the category of the Cooper Flag Juju deal. She's a spokesperson for a athletic apparel brand. I happen to have their sweatpants on right now called Viuri. I think mine are different than what she sells, I hope.
I've never even heard of that brand.
Yeah, but it's a very popular brand.
Their clothes are great. My daughter wears stuff that I found out how expensive it was, that to me they were just sweatpants this year for Christmas. And I'm like, are you effing kidding me? Wow.
But that's where she's getting most of her money, is through that company. Now, she gets some other deals and stuff because of her social media following and all that. But she may be getting something from LSU in terms of the collective concept, but most of her income is coming from national endorsements. I mean, I've seen her on television commercials for this brand. You might have seen her doing cartwheels on the beach in her sweatpants. I mean, you may or may not have seen that commercial, but it's out there and it pays her. It's not the same as what we're talking about being imperiled, potentially imperiled by this house settlement. She's going to be fine, and whoever her successors are going to be fine. It's the PJ Haggerty's, it's the Desmond Clods, it's athletes who when you had great players at various schools, Zach Edey, for instance, earned NIL money in his final season at Purdue. It's one of the reasons they made a trip to Canada to play, because he could not earn NIL money in the United States, but he could in Canada, where he's from. So they went there for a game, and he was able to do some things, and he was able to get compensated. And those are the kinds of things that, again, I don't know for certain they're going to be outlawed. We don't know 100% how this group is going to act. Because remember, when the last time there was an outside party that was doing NCAA justice, so to speak, like everybody, like no one even went on probation practically. No one got any penalties from the outside body. So we don't know how they're going to react to these deals. We have suspicions that it's going to be different. Because we know those deals are going to have to be approved as long as they're greater than $600. Everyone's going to have to go through a clearinghouse to be approved. We don't know what the standards will be. They have not said, but we suspect that the standard will change from old-fashioned NIL, as I call it, to pure market value NIL. And that, as I said, when that happens, For the time that it's in place, which will be basically 1 year, the 26-27 academic year, for the time that's in place, it will seem more, you know, things will be more balanced economically. Competitively, who knows? But I believe that there will be injunctions granted almost immediately. I believe that the court cases will ultimately be lost, because if I'm Mike DeCourcy, point guard, and I was able to get to a school because they offered me $1.5 to $2 million in NIL money through the collective, and then all of a sudden I can't get that, and my revenue share, I can't get $2 million in revenue share unless I'm Anthony Hardaway, like unless I'm Magic Johnson. They're not, like, nobody's cutting a $2 million check out of $20 million, $20.5 million for a point guard. It's not happening in terms of the revenue share. So the only way I get that 2 million is through the collective. And if I can't get it because you changed the rules, of course I'm going to sue.
Yeah. And Cabro asked this earlier, and I thought of talked about this before, but What about the impact that this will have on the Big East? The Big East teams, maybe one or two of them have a football team, but I don't think any of them have football teams.
Some of them have FCS.
Really have to worry about funding big time football, which is where 75% of the money at, say, Indiana or Georgia is going to go. They don't have to worry about that. And we saw Kevin Willard leave the Big Ten to go into the Big East. And I'm sure he knew what he was doing when he did that too. He knew that that was there. And does that bring about a competitive advantage in some way?
It could. Again, I don't think it's going to be very protracted in terms of length of time, because I just don't believe this, that if the collective model is barred, I just don't think that will stand. I don't think it'll last. So for the time that it's,
man, it will not stand.
For the time it's in place, it will help. But I don't think it will stand up to court action, that particular element. The rest of the settlement, I don't think there's going to be much problem with it. They've gotten through a lot. But I think the part of this deal, honestly, Jim, that is being most overlooked because it doesn't involve money going to athletes, which is where everybody, the part of it that is most overlooked is the aspect, it does involve money going to athletes, just not current athletes. The past athletes are getting over $1 billion from, I think it's 2016 to 2022, a window of people that were not allowed to get name, image, and likeness money. They will get a settlement if they're part of the class, okay? And that money will be funded. About 40% of it, I believe, is going to come from the power conferences. And the rest is going to come from the other conferences. So there's 4 to 5 power conferences, depending on how you frame it. And then there's 25 or so non-power conference money. There's 25 or so non-power conference in terms of money. And they're going to have to pay a significant portion of this settlement. And they all freaked out about it because they're saying, hey, we don't have football teams, why do we have to pay? And what they all missed in that, Jim, is that in order to pay that money back, the money has to come from the NCAA tournament. They don't have it otherwise. The only way they get it is a portion of their NCAA tournament revenue will go into this settlement fund over the course of the next 10 years. So what does that mean, Jim? It means there has to be an NCAA tournament. It means there has to be automatic qualification and therefore distribution to these schools. So this settlement, its greatest achievement is the near-term preservation of the NCAA tournament somewhat in its current form. Might be expanded and messed up a little bit, but they're not going to ruin the core of it. The idea of automatic bids for every conference champion and a field that can be put on a single page bracket at some point. That's that part of it, the part that we love the most, the part that is most lucrative for the schools and funds the NCAA and all of that, that can't go away. You can't say, hey, you have to pay out of that money and then take away that money. So it's going to be in place for a decade, Jim. And that part needs to be celebrated more. Everybody's missing this. I wrote about it months ago, and no one's talking about it because they're so obsessed with whether or not P.J. Haggerty's going to get money from K-State next year or whatever, or the next P.J. Haggerty. Like, that's all that anybody can think about. But it's much more important that March Madness continue as it has than whether or not some quarterback gets $1.5 million. I don't care. I really can't care less how much Arch Manning gets paid by the University of Texas to play for them. It doesn't mean anything to me. And it hasn't meant that much in terms of the competition. It has changed the identity maybe of some of the teams that have won, but it has not changed the nature of the competition. If anything, this concept has leveled it a little bit. We didn't have an Indiana going 11-1 in the regular season until this happened. So the idea that we were more balanced in the past before, it was nonsense. We had the same four teams take 60% of the playoff spots between 2014 and 2024. The same four teams took more than 60%. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma. 60% of the available bids went to those four schools. We didn't have any balance then. It's a fantasy. Now we do, and I don't want to see it go away from that.
Yeah, it seems like it's at least heading in a direction of controllability, but there doesn't seem to ever be control. Someone made a great comment. I think it was, yeah, five lefts. Instead of you being a point guard, you're a point god, he said. And I was like, oh my, that is amazing. Great ball, point five. PG,
well, thank you for that.
Starting PG, baby. Starting PG, Mike DeCourcy. Absolutely. Man, I've got to take a break, but we'll talk more about this because it is just something that is going to impact things. But when we come back, how does it help a team like Indiana or Purdue when Ohio State and Michigan are going to get the same amount of money? So I wonder how that comparing apples to apples. Lots more coming up. The great Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Fox and Big Ten Networks. Make sure you are giving him a follow and keeping up with all of the incredible great content on the nation's oldest sports magazine online. Doesn't matter. It's still the oldest, baby. And one of the best because they've got Mike DeCourcy back with more. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. So glad to have you along as we're fortunate to have the great Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Big Ten, and Fox Networks as we're talking about the House settlement and how it has finally been approved. But we are far away from getting away from lawsuits. I'm quite certain of that, as Mike has mentioned, the many ways that will happen. But now you've got this czar guy who is over this. Then you've got the NCAA over here. I'm just trying to, how many different entities are involved in managing an aspect of college athletics? I'm trying to think. You've got the college football championship.
Right.
So that's separate.
That's one.
And I guess that's it now with the House settlement and the NCAA.
I think you could say we have four, Jim. We have four. If I'm not right, you have the NCAA running playing rules, eligibility, and championships. That's one. You have the college football playoff, which runs the college football championship that is separate from NCAA. NCAA runs the championships for every other sport. D2, D3, rowing, men's basketball, all of it. They got it all.
How did they get kicked out of running football?
They were never in football because there was no championship. The bowls started early on. There was no impetus to have a championship. Remember, the NCAA became involved in the men's basketball championship because the coaches wanted it. They didn't like the idea of a group in New York running the big tournament, the NIT, and they wanted to have their own championship, an NCAA, you know, a national championship that wasn't Eastern-based. So they started the NCAA championship. At the time, I'm not even sure it had that label. I'm not 100% positive. But they started the NCAA tournament in 1939 as a reaction to the NIT, and then it grew and then ultimately usurped the NIT, and then ultimately the NCAA bought the NIT through a court settlement. So that's how that all evolved. And then all through the years, we saw all these other championships be added at the NCAA level. So those are two. We have Deloitte, which is the clearinghouse for the NIL concept that we talked about earlier for the first segment. And then you have this body, and I don't even know if it has a name. I frankly don't care. But it has a boss now that they hired away from Major League Baseball, and that enforcement arm, if we want to call it that. So that's the fourth. So we now have more cooks involved in college athletics than we ever did, Jim. Before we just had one, and we had one, the NCAA, and the bowl system operated with NCAA approval, but wasn't really integrated in the NCAA. And then you had two when the college football playoff was launched in 2014, and now we have four. It's different, but I've always said what the NCAA has always done best. People always thought of the NCAA more as an enforcement arm than anything else. But what the NCAA has always done best is run championships. They are extraordinary at it. College World Series, Women's College World Series, obviously the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournaments. All of this stuff is done so well. They know exactly how to do it. They know exactly how to monetize it at the highest level possible. They maybe have undervalued at times some of their sports, just really out of lack of imagination of particular leaders who I won't name. Mark Emmert. I didn't say that, did I? They do an extraordinary job in the field of championships, and so let them do what they do best. People say, why do we need it? Well, because if you don't have the NCAA to do that, somebody has to do that, which means you have to hire hundreds, if not thousands, of people to do all that work, and you have no institutional knowledge to do it. Why would you not want the NCAA to be a part of this?
And just a side note, the gentleman that runs all of the NCAA's men's championships, I went to high school with. L.J. Wright yes. has been doing it for quite some time. His dad, Les Wright, was our athletics director at Floyd Central High School for a long time. So, L.J.'s been doing that for a long time and does a great job. But like you said, that's a lot. I mean, I don't know if people realize you've got all these different divisions of championships and they've really tried to streamline them here lately with the basketball. A lot of the basketball championships have been in Indiana, which kept it close. You had Division I, II, and III right. at one time. So and the NIT. So good. Hopefully it stays that way. That's good for Indianapolis because it gets the Final Four every so often. It's kind of like Louisville when the PGA owned Valhalla. Until they arrested Scottie Scheffler. Now that they will never, I guarantee you, Louisville will never host a PGA major again, ever. you mark it. I don't see it ever happening again, but getting off the subject there. But any other ways that this changes adds those monkeys in wrenches into the deal here. It seems like it's already been crazy. It seems like schools have just been waiting for this to go. They've been at the ready for the most part, and they're just ready to go. And now they can go. Will this have an impact on recruiting right now, immediately?
It will have some small, it will have a close to the ground impact in terms of, like, for instance, if I am, again, the point god, and I am being recruited, if that happens to be the case, I may make a decision based on what revenue share I'm being offered from a particular school as opposed to another particular school. I may have favored the second school, but then school A offered me more money. And so that may make my decision different, but I don't think on a macro level it will have a big impact. Because everybody, at least for now, everybody's got the same amount of money to offer. So I don't think that will impact it that much. We'll see. Again, so much of it depends on how NIL is processed, and we don't know what that will be. We don't have any idea. I can't say. I think that the impact, again, on this, that there are impacts of this settlement that are being overlooked. All these schools have to come up with $20.5 million if they want to feel like they're as competitive as possible. But where does the money come from? Well, one way it comes is that a lot of the money that they've been putting into capital projects, they might not do that as much in the future. There might not be as much expansion of facilities or refinement of facilities that as there has been over the last 20 years. Another element is staff size. You know this, Jim, from looking at a staff directory at a college institution in, let's say, 1995 or 2000, and then looking at it now, there are many more employees than there were years ago. I mean, there when I was covering Memphis or Cincinnati, I knew almost everybody in the department practically. And I couldn't do that now. If I were covering day-to-day a particular school, you couldn't know every single person in the department. There are too many. I was going to say,
sports information departments. When I was in college, IU had one SID for football and basketball, and I guess pretty much for everything else. Kit Klingelhofer was the guy who did it all. Now, every sport has an SID. There are some that double up, but every single sport, there are like, I don't know, 10 SIDs in a department now, as opposed to one as it used to be.
You're seeing staffs cut. Duke, I believe, cut staff recently. I see from time to time particular people who've worked in college athletics for 20 years announcing that they're no longer at such and such a school. I think it's partly because they've gotten to the point where their salaries are pretty good, and the school believes they can get by either without that or with somebody covering the work at a lower salary, that sort of thing. It's a little bit like what corporate America does sometimes to meet their quarterly projections, so their stock price doesn't plunge. We see that from time to time in the corporate world, and I think that there's going to be some of that at the collegiate level, and it may involve, and I think this is more as cover. I've said this before, schools don't cut sports because they want to save money, Jim. They cut sports because they don't want to be in that sport anymore. And during the pandemic, Cincinnati got rid of their men's soccer team. Well, why did they do that? Well, the pandemic cut. No, it wasn't about that. It was about their men's soccer team wasn't any good. It had no following. They drew like almost no fans. And so it just didn't make sense for them to have the sport anymore in their eyes. And I think that was defensible, but they used the pandemic as cover for that. Oh, we have this, so we have to get rid of men's soccer. I think you'll see that in some instances now. I know that there's a lot of doom talk about how this is going to impact Olympic sports and they're going to have to come up with new models and all that. I don't buy that, Jim. I really don't, because in a lot of ways, from the standpoint of the athletic department's finances, it's never made sense to have large athletic departments because they don't generate a ton of revenue.
Yes, especially sports that are just drains. It's what's the point?
Well, I think that what's missed, Jim, is that those sports generate money for the university. They are additive to the university's bottom line in a lot of cases. So you want to run track in college. It's something you want to do before you settle down and go to work 50 hours a week, with your engineering degree or whatever it is. So you want to run track. So you get offered, I don't know, a partial scholarship worth $3,000-$4,000 a year to go to good old State U. Well, then good old State U gets the rest of your tuition from you. And so you're an additive. You are adding to the bottom line of the university because you're paying for all the rest of it. And in some instances, they're not giving you any scholarships. When Robert Morris started a FBS football program, no scholarships, because they wanted kids who wanted to have the experience of playing college football come to their campus. And so all of those students are basically either getting regular aid or paying full rides, paying their own way so they can play football at Robert Morris. That's what they were doing it for, because they wanted to add students who wanted to play football. It's so though that it's the same all the way across all the Olympic sports. So the idea that everybody's just going to close up all their Olympic sports because now they've got this revenue share thing they have to do. As I said, there will be some who do it for economic reasons, not many. Most of it will do it because they want to be out of the business of that particular sport. But I don't think there will be any that will be shutting down because this is impossible to navigate. I don't buy that at all.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Fox Big Ten Networks. Make sure you're going to the Sporting News and catching all of his great content. And, Mike, we appreciate you, buddy. See you next week and looking forward to it as always.
And look forward to tomorrow when this is right up Indiana's alley. I do an article about why it's different. The sport of basketball is different in Indiana. Echoing somewhat what Rick Carlisle said after the
49 the states, baby.
Yes, exactly. So
he should have said in 49 states in Puerto Rico.
I had already had the idea to write about it, the concept. And then when he wasn't able to get his hands on the microphone initially, but when he got the stage after making the finals and said what he said, I had it. I said, now I have to write about it.
Well, did you see that and I'm over time, but that's okay. Gainbridge Fieldhouse, they opened it up for a watch party.
Yes.
For the road games. 17,000 people for a freaking watch party.
Awesome.
Just to
awesome.
Watch the game on the damn Jumbotron. That's the boom.
Thank God for modern technology, Jim, because in 2008, my wife and I went to the Pittsburgh Civic Arena, for a watch party for the Penguins against the Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Finals. And you couldn't see the game. Like, it just was impossible on 2008 technology. Now you go to Gainbridge Fieldhouse and you see the game on a 70-foot screen and it's crystal clear. Hey, modern technology, man, is awesome.
It is, as are you, my friend, Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Fox Big Ten. Look forward to seeing you next week, brother.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, sir. Hey, we've got lots more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Hey, welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. On this Tuesday, it is absolutely gorgeous out there, and it is going to remain that way, at least in our area, which I'm coming to you from Bloomington, the epicenter of basketball in the Indiana universe, of course. Just kidding. I cannot wait to see Mike's piece that he has coming out. That's in the Sporting News. That's a national newspaper. It is the magazine, the oldest sports magazine in the United States. So very, very cool. And I look forward to that. And, you should too. Hey, make sure you go to thehoosier.com and, subscribe. If you want to keep up on what is happening with IU sports, if you want to know what is going on with recruiting for basketball, for football, Alec Lasley, Kyler Staley, Zach Browning, they are all in deep and deeply connected. In addition to the guys like Joe Tipton and Jamie Shaw and Steve Wiltfong for football, who are breaking stories, greatly appreciate you supporting those guys because that is how the coverage comes to you. That's how we're able to get some of these great guests and do what we are able to do. So please remember that and go subscribe to thehoosier.com. Buck for the first month, $1, and then 50% off the entire first year. Hey, how about the college baseball, NCAA college baseball tournament right now going on? Yes, it is. Has already a big time story that I am loving, loving, loving. And that is the fact that the Murray State Racers, the Pacers and Racers, continue. Does this bode well for the Indiana Pacers? Let's hope so. But the Murray State Racers last night continue. They upset Ole Miss to get to the, get to the Super Regionals. Then, so they had to go to Duke, play at Duke, and were able to last night pull off the series win. 2-1 with a great, I was watching the game last night. It was fun. And the crazy part was the ending. Duke had scored, I think they hit a solo home run maybe. They scored a run either way and got within a run. They get a guy on first. And so I think they had one out. And they just needed a ground ball. And they get the ground ball, throw to second. And when I was watching it, I said the same thing that the call was. I said, they're going to call that guy out, and they're going to call the guy at first out for interference by the runner, because it looked like he really took him out. And then they ran the replay, and I'm like, oh, man. The shortstop just tripped over the guy's knee. He stayed within the base path. So they ended up changing the call, putting the guy back on first. The guy at second was out. But so Duke was still alive. But Murray State had celebrated because they that was it. The game was over when they made that call. Well, they start celebrating. They're in the big dog pile with everybody. It's going nuts. Well, then it turns out now they reversed the call at first because there was no interference, which was correct. And now Duke is back up at the plate. Murray State has to come back from all of that celebration. I mean, when I say dog pile, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. They were all in it. All that celebrating, the pitcher mentally had to go from having just won the game to now having to face another batter with a runner on base. Well, he got him into a grounder to the first baseman. Boom, boom. Now it's over. Now they could celebrate. The Murray State Racers are going to the College World Series, man. One of just 8 teams that will be participating. Louisville in the College World Series as well. So looking forward to that getting started. It's always fun. And it's those games are just fun, man. And I enjoy them. Too bad we don't have, I started to say a Big Ten team, man, although technically or not technically, but I guess really there is one with UCLA. I guess you count them now since they're in the conference. But, the final 8 includes number 3 Arkansas, number 6 LSU from the SEC, number 8 Oregon State of the former Pac-12, number 13 Coastal Carolina, number 15 UCLA, Louisville, and Arizona. Arkansas, LSU, UCLA, and Coastal Carolina all swept their Super Regionals. So there's that. 4 teams are making their first appearance in Omaha since winning the title last. Murray State has never been to a College World Series. Not a big shocker there. But that's incredible. You've got Coastal Carolina and Murray State in the College World Series. Coastal Carolina and Murray State are 2 of the final 8 teams in college baseball. Now, Murray State is, they're far enough south that, again, if you look at these teams, Arkansas, south, LSU, south, Oregon State, coast, Coastal Carolina, coast, UCLA, coast. Louisville is the furthest north team that is in the College World Series. Arizona, Southwest, Arkansas, South. Oh, I've already read that one. But they didn't. Murray State, South, you know, they're just above Tennessee. So, again, baseball tends to come, the teams in there tend to come from the South and the coastal regions because they can practice all the time. Jeremy Gray is going to join us in the next segment as well. Look forward to talking to him about the Tatanka. But also, we'll talk to him a little bit about the house settlement, as I know that's not his wheelhouse per se, but he's a rarely educated person when it comes to that stuff. He kind of has to be working in sports media as well. Also, Jeremy handles the PA for the men's basketball games, and I can't wait to look for. He always, the funny thing that he does is he has to make the call for the end of sale of alcohol during each game, and it's I think it's around what would normally be the end of the third quarter, which is about 10 minutes to go, and it's become a routine. He starts to announce it, the students boo, and then he has a response, which is usually comical. I'm asking him again today. I've asked him before, but I'll ask him on the air today. Man, you've got to have those at hand because they're always different. The responses are always different. They'll boo and he's like, oh, quit it. You've got school tomorrow or whatever. But pretty funny. Jeremy, a good dude. He's always great. I'm always grateful that he'll take the time to come on with us. But Tatanka, the Bison. The Bison is coming back. And it's going to be interesting how Indiana is going to not only implement this, introduce it. Are we going to see the a mascot kind of like, well, I hate to say it, but Hoosier Hanks? That if any of you guys saw that for Hoosier Hank, they had the Bison outfit. They could probably just take that one and use it. But we got that going for us. Over on the hotline, what was DeVries told not to say as a phrase in his interviews? I don't know. Gritty says she always boos him when he makes that announcement. Oh, so it's not just the students. It's the adults too. But I'm just kidding. It's not so much a running joke, but it's a partnership. He makes the announcement and the people, and it's usually the student section, but others join in and boo just as a joke. But Robert says Kentucky is a baseball state. Yeah, not sure I'd say that, but they know Louisville has a good baseball program. Murray State's just a shock. That's not something we've seen before, but congratulations to them. It's incredible to see a school that small. Murray State, let's see, how Murray State enrollment, this is going to be interesting to see because I know it is not much. I'm thinking 3,000. I'm sorry. I was doubled. Murray State's the entering freshman. That's the entering freshman class. I want to know what the total class is. That's the freshman class was 1500, but that doesn't tell me. This is one of its largest freshman classes in its history though. So, hey, so that means they're probably 12, not 10,000. Not terribly small when you can, well, that's still small, but, and that's just a guesstimate. I still haven't seen the actual number of what their total enrollment is, but it's one of the smaller schools, I can tell you that. It's not that of the SEC schools or UCLA and schools like that. So, fun to watch the underdogs. And I will be taking the underdog, Murray State. Plus, you keep up the Pacers and Racers theme. This can continue now. The Pacers should adopt Murray State in this. I think that I'm going to make that. Fred asking Jordan Hall's golf outing this year. It sure is. The Never Lose Hoop That won't come up until August, I believe. We'll have more information on that when we get a little closer. But yes, that will continue, of course. Let's see. What else was I going to look for? But anyway, yeah, I'm looking forward to the College World Series now getting underway out in Omaha. K-Bro, who gave us a nice little question earlier, normally gets to go out there, but Florida, persona non grata this year. They did not make it. As a matter of fact, was there just two SEC teams, Arkansas and LSU? I mean, that's a surprise in and of itself. They didn't list where's the entire team or the entire list? This is a little surprising. You only have two SEC schools. The ACC had the opportunity to put more in as Duke losing last night to Murray State. Back, Jeremy Gray will join us. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. Jeremy Gray joins us now from the campus of Indiana University, a senior athletics director. And there's so many titles I can never keep up with them, but I know you're a senior associate AD, but you handle more of the media relations side. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, media relations, kind of our creative services, our broadcast partnerships. Those would be in my bailiwick. And then I'm the sport administrator for baseball, swimming and diving, tennis, and volleyball.
Any other side jobs? You raking yards? You doing anything like that?
You know what? Actually, it's a bunch of little jobs that barely equal a real job. So yeah, don't feel sorry for me.
Hey, I say it all the time. I go, it's the hours add up, but I'm not digging a ditch, so I'm not going to complain. But welcome. Thanks a lot for taking time to join us here today. I appreciate it. There's actually so much going on, but Indiana, things are going really well with IU Athletics now with the signing of Darren DeVries, which brings in a fresh breath to the basketball program. And the excitement going, this has never happened. We're going into a fall, at least I am, knowing Indiana's going to have a good football team, a good football season. I just don't know how good it's going to be. I've yet to release my number. Last year I went with a 6-0 start, then it was an 8-0 start, and we nailed that. So I want to keep my streak going. But I've got confidence in not only what Cignetti and crew are doing, but this program around. And I think they're going to surprise people again.
Yeah, it's been interesting that they're returning several key players on both sides of the ball. They've had a great transfer haul. A lot of people believe that Indiana picked up a great quarterback in the offseason. But because of the name on the front of the jersey, some of the pundit class is, you know, thinking that it's going to be a regression back to 7-5, which, by the way, a year and a half ago would have been a dream season for Indiana football. But go ahead, sleep on the Hoosiers again. Don't rank Indiana in the top 25. I think it's just fuel for the team, and I think it's going to be a really good year. Fans are fired up. Ticket sales are at unprecedented levels, to be quite frank, and I think there's a real chance that we can establish a durable, successful program that's built to last, following up last year's miracle season with another great year this year.
Yeah, I've been looking and reading, and I'm like, okay, I'm like, they're giving them the credit that I think that they're going to command, and which is fine. That's where Kurt Cignetti loves to live. I've never seen somebody who loves to just prove people wrong more than he does. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it in the way of taking the challenge and going, now what do you think?
Well, yeah, he talks about complacency, a no-growth mindset, people being too comfortable all the time. Go ahead. I mean, like, if the national media and the national college football fandom wants to discredit IU, I think you're playing right into Kurt Cignetti and the team's hands.
Yeah, and I'll say this, as you just, some of the phraseology you just mentioned, the players, to a T, all have the same vernacular. They're all on the same page, talking about complacency is this and that. And it sounds like just phrases they're throwing out, but it's not. It's because Kurt Cignetti and crew has ingrained that into these guys day in, day out, and they live that, and they play that, and that is what's led to, or a big part of what has led to the success Indiana's seen on the field.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, there are some coaches that are successful in the portal, some coaches that are not successful in the portal. And, you know, we've had our hits and misses here at Indiana over a variety of sports, but it's really important when you bring in players from other programs to understand how they will fit into your culture, how they will adapt to your culture, how they will conform to your culture. And I've never seen a coach do it better than Kurt Cignetti. Kurt Cignetti knows Kurt Cignetti guys, finds Kurt Cignetti guys. Obviously, some of them came from a school that he used to coach, but they all conform to the culture that's already here rather than taking the best player available, regardless of how they would conform to the culture. And there is great buy-in.
Yeah, I've seen that going on with the recent commitments as well, as they continue pulling spring commitments up to 12 now. So that continues to bode well for this football program. Speaking of football, well, first of all, basketball, when you're doing the games, you are, to me, the funniest thing is when you have to announce the closing of beer sales coming up. And I've mentioned this to you before. And every time when the students boo you, it's a routine, people, as I've said, this is part of it's like Abbott and Costello. But you always have a different response, and there's no way you're coming up with all those off the cuff. You got to have those ready to go, right?
It's kind of a mixed bag. Sometimes I make it up, you know, on the fly because I forgot to do it before. Some of them, they're a little pre-written, especially, you know, like, we're heading into finals week, and, you know, I'll just say, hey, it's a school night. Make sure you study. But it started pretty early. They just started booing the crap out of me every time I read it. And I just figured it merited a bit of a response. They were having fun with it. I wanted to have fun with it, too. And it's kind of become a thing.
Yeah, it's funny. And I think that even some of the adults mentioned that they've joined in as well. But how much fun do you have getting to do that?
It's enjoyable. One of the great things about doing public address, similar to my many years doing play-by-play, you feel more immersed in the game when you have to pay attention to every element of the game the whole time. And so it's really satisfying that way. And, you know, there have been some great and wonderful moments in just 2.5 years into it, both in men's and women's basketball. So I've enjoyed that. Now, by the 40th night, am I a little tired of hot dogs? Yes. But other than that, being totally immersed in the games has been a really enjoyable experience. And seeing a lot of the same people, you know, game in and game out, you know, as they get to their seats and talking to the fan base, it's been good that way.
Because you do men's and women's, right?
I do. I do men's and women's. So about 40 games a year. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, frankly, my kids get a bit of a kick out of it, too, is – it was funny when I first started doing it, and it was just to be a temporary replacement for Chuck, who retired before the end of the season. My own children did not know that I had a long kind of career in sports broadcasting. And so it's been fun to kind of reconnect that to my past a little bit.
Where were you last? Was you South Bend?
So, well, I mean, I was a sports broadcaster in South Bend for a couple of years. And then I did women's basketball play-by-play here. Did a pregame football show here, and I was the original broadcaster for IU baseball. And then I hosted the Tom Crean and Kevin Wilson television shows.
But that must have been fun. You talk about two different characteristics there, man. Oh wow, that's back to. Can you imagine being Chuck Marlow?
Yeah, no, I mean the old two seats, a potted plant, coaches shows. You know, those things have died. They had a great run, especially in the 80s and 90s.
Did you ever see Between Two Ferns. You ever see that with?
Yeah, a little bit of Between Two Ferns. You know, they were fun to do for a while, but it, you know, it was always tough. Like, especially like basketball's lost three games in a row. How do I get 22 and a half minutes out of this? It wasn't always easy, but it was a good experience nonetheless.
I'm sure it was. Tatanka. People have seen the videos floating around. Jeremy's acting skills. If you haven't, look it up. I think you could probably find it on the IU Athletics Twitter and Facebook, probably. I'm not sure where all it is. You would know better than I, Jeremy.
Yeah, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We've got a YouTube channel that they're all on. They've been widely shared. It was just kind of a fun way for the creative staff here to screw around this spring. We had a good time putting those together.
Now, there's been this growing groundswell of people wanting the return of the Bison, which is, at first, it's for people outside of Indiana, or especially outside of IU, maybe that probably is going to sound crazy and weird, because first of all, their first question already is, what the hell is a Hoosier? And now they're going to say, what the hell does a Bison have to do with a Hoosier? But we know that it's on the state seal, and that back in the day they used to roam freely across Indiana. But the Bison is it's a great mascot. I love the Bison. But how are they going to – is this going to actually come back as a mascot?
It is, yeah. So it's coming back as a mascot, Hoosier the Bison. It will debut fall of this year. So, you know, you come to football games, soccer matches, volleyball matches, and the like, you're going to see Hoosier the Bison. We're really excited about it. We've for a while been the one of two Big Ten institutions that did not have a mascot. And we think it'll help define things, and it will elevate fan experience. And I think it's time to have a new tradition here at IU. And it's been a long time, other than the towels last year for football, which I think is going to be a lasting tradition. It's been a long time since we've established new traditions here. And I think, you know, we've got some great ones, the candy stripe pants, the script Indiana, the under eight timeout. We've got some great, great traditions. We think this will add to it, and it'll be a great element for the fan experience, and really important, especially for young fans.
Yeah, it's always anything you can do to get people more involved, and I think that will be something cool. But we need a live Bison, on at least for football. Down there, you put a little caged area.
Well, a lot of people say that, but no one's willing to volunteer their son or daughter to be the person who runs this thing onto the field with a leash. So it's
ride it, Jeremy. Like, I will ride it onto the field.
I think Jim Coyle should skydive today. You know, it's like easy for me to say. Yeah. There's some challenges with the live mascot. We actually talked about that for a while. There's some challenges with it. It's not to say that we won't ever get to that point. The live mascots that you see in college sports, a lot of them have a very long legacy. You know, the people who run Bevo around, that's become a tradition to be the trainers of this animal. We think it would be really expensive and difficult to do it now. It doesn't mean that it won't ever happen in the future, but we're gonna have a pretty awesome mascot in a suit.
Yeah, buying a Bison is not exactly like going out and getting a dog.
I will say what's actually been kind of fun is I've had some outreach from people who have Bison farms.
Yeah.
And they said, we've got a calf, it would be perfect. And then they've invited Hoosier to come out to their farm. So I think there's a way to get it done, but it just won't happen right now.
Oh no, I would expect that would be an amazing thing to see. But there's a Bison farm down in Floyd's Knobs, where the area where I'm from originally, and when I used to go by there. Yeah, it's not like keeping a dog, people. You've got like an 8-foot fence, since the high tensile wiring. Not because they're mean or anything like that, just they're big.
It'll probably always work out until it has a bad day, you know? So you got to plan for the bad day.
The worst part, as someone mentioned yesterday, is cleaning up any potential messes that may happen on a football field. He wouldn't want that to happen. That'd be like playing. I've read old football stories about guys playing on a field like the day after a circus was there. They're like, man, they had elephants everywhere, and you know how that goes. But I think it would be cool as hell. I think people are really behind this. And I haven't heard. Normally you get to hear the people that support something, but you also hear the people that poo-poo it or whatever. I haven't heard much of that.
To be honest with you. When we were entertaining the idea of adopting the mascot, we talked to some professional and college teams that have adopted the mascot in the last 20 years or so. So the Chicago Cubs with Clark, things like that. And we were actually going to be fine if it was a 60-40 reaction. Like, we understand that there's going to be pushback, anything new, challenges, assumptions, and people get upset about it. Alternate jerseys are kind of the classic example. Half love them, half hate them almost every single time.
Let's talk about names. Oh, my God. You better go crazy.
So you do those types of things. Anytime you make a big change, there's going to be some pushback. But I think the way that it was rolled out over time, teasing it with video board graphics, schedule cards, allowing the fan base to run wild with AI-generated graphics of Bison, chain smoking while beating up the Hawkeye or whatever. all of that has kind of laid the groundwork to a better reception. And right now, the way I kind of view it is it's been 95-5 positive. I've seen some negative. And I understand it's disruptive to what they've experienced, and it's our job to make them like it over time. It's been overwhelmingly positive, and it's been really positively received by the athletes themselves. They are fired up that we've got a mascot. And I do think it's actually important for us to connect with younger fans. And this is not one of those, hey, we're going to play more rap music at games, connect with younger fans thing that's controversial. But there really have not been new traditions given to students and people younger. And I think we have to look at it. It's been 25 years since we've been an elite basketball program. We can't just rest on great things that happened in 1992 forever. We have to reconnect. And, you look at the student section in basketball last year. We filled it up one time. We filled up all of the balconies, the entire stadium one time. In the student section. And so we gotta go to work here. And I think this is a step in the right direction of engaging students and especially younger people. There's a ton of research that's been done on fan behavior that if you have chosen your favorite team in a sport by the age of 6, that loyalty will be much greater than choosing it after the age of 6. And anecdotally, that is true in my case for Indiana, St. Louis Cardinals baseball. I have an irrational love for those teams, and it's because it's rooted in my childhood, and anything that can kind of engage really young fans I think is important too.
I am a despaired Reds fan and have been for many years. It's has not been fun, but I agree with you and understand, because that's how you cultivate, even with children of fans, when they're trying to and push that on to their kids. There needs to be something for them to grab on to, because they need that excitement.
A lot of people do not want any change from the bottom. Not a lot of people. There's a certain subset of the fan base that does not want any change from the Bob Knight era. But think about the Bob Knight era. Candy stripe pants, script Indiana, the under 8 timeout, the Martha the Mop Lady video. There are all sorts of new traditions that were started in that period of time. And I think towels at football games, a mascot, are nice new traditions that can be added to the fold without displacing. It's not like we're junking the candy stripe pants,
I wrote a song for Kurt Cignetti. It goes with some music, but that would be the great third quarter or entering the fourth quarter song. I'll have to send it to you sometime.
Okay.
I just like playing around with stuff. I'm always sending you stupid. I'm ADHD to the nth degree, and stuff hits my brain, and I'm like, I just send it to people. But yeah, I think that people are really, really excited about this. They're looking forward to it. When's the first time that the fans are going to get to experience this?
So I've been asked this question a lot. This is one of those, I'm just going to keep it shrouded in mystery. Stay tuned. But you're going to get to see it a lot here. It, full disclosure, the worst thing that we can do is pick out a great suit, which I think we have. I think we had an effective rollout, but that's for other people to judge. And then screw up the execution of the mascot itself. Like, oh gosh, it doesn't do anything, or it just stands around. So we gotta train people to wear this. We gotta actually figure out everything that it's going to do before we display it to the public. It'd be like building a gorgeous restaurant, hiring a great chef, having an amazing ad campaign to open the new restaurant, and then not knowing how to cook the food. And so I think it's important to make sure that we get all of the elements lined up before we have it interacting with the public. But it's gonna be everywhere. You're gonna see it everywhere.
Yeah, you only get one chance to make a first impression. So sure. I get that. But yeah, like I said, it's been all positive. This has been going on for a few years too, people looking at this. So that's probably the best part is it's been a slow groundswell and just a buildup. And now it's come to reality. And it also opens up the opportunity for a lot more merchandising.
It does. You can sell, there's a chance, the estimates are that it could add $500,000 in new royalty revenue for the university. So it's a revenue driver.
Yeah, that will help to go to pay for the things that we were talking about earlier with all the new changes coming and with the house case and all that. The football posters that I look at every day, the bison horns coming through a little sneak peek kind of a deal. I assume that was done with purpose.
It was. We kind of at that point knew that we were going to do this. And so just kind of planting the seeds a little bit to make the ultimate landing a little bit easier.
I know the house settlement case is not stuff that you normally deal with, but you're always educated about it because of the guys, the people you deal with. How getting this done, is this something that makes things easier for you guys now to deal with these athletes because you're going forward? Because we're July 1st is when this is supposed to start.
Yeah, this is a major period of disruption in college sports. And I do think that the athletes who have generated so much revenue deserve to be compensated and compensated handsomely. I will say having kind of final word has provided stability that will allow us to move forward. So it's been a good development for IU athletics and frankly, everybody else in college sports to at least know what the next step is going to be. I don't think it's the final step. I think there's still a lot more to be worked out, but we at least know what the number is. We at least know what the process is, and we can now finally make some decisions. It's been really tough on coaches both in revenue sports and in Olympic sports to understand what the rules of the road are going to be. They knew vaguely that they were going to be able to find compensation for athletes, but how much? Well, now we actually get to do the math problem and figure it out. And while it's not perfect, I don't think that this is going to be the end result. I do think it's an important base for us to move forward on, and we can finally start making real decisions. And it's really, really tough too. Like our budget cycle is we start setting budgets in March and April, and our fiscal year is not the same as it is in corporate America. It's July 1st to June 30th. And so all of this was coming right on the doorstep. And do we have to pay $21 million or not pay $21 million? That's a very relevant question when you're making budgets. And so to have some answers there has allowed us all to take a breath. It doesn't mean that it's perfect or that all entities are going to be happy or we haven't figured out totally yet, but at least we can work on the problem.
And with everything being equal, with all the schools getting the same, say just in the Big Ten, how is that going to give Indiana any kind of, it's not going to really offer an advantage since everybody is the same for everyone.
But it's not a disadvantage, and I have great faith that Kurt Cignetti, with his yellow legal pad and his insane attention to detail, I trust Kurt Cignetti's math problem solving better than I do any other coach in the Big Ten. And I think Darren DeVries is going to be in the same category. These are sharp people who think about these issues deeply. And I think our advantage is the brain power.
How important to Indiana athletics, to Indiana, was last season's football season? I mean, we're talking
having ESPN College Game Day here was $3 million in unpaid advertising for the university. Then you start talking about increased ticket sales, especially in a time of enormous economic instability in college sports, to be selling more tickets and to be able to count on certain revenue, I think is extraordinarily important. I think everybody in the athletic department walked 2 inches taller into work every day, knowing that we were a nationally relevant college football program. You see how it's impacted students. It's my understanding that applications to Indiana were up as a result. I think it changed the town in many ways. I think Bloomington, on some level, and I love Bloomington. It's my home. You know, you can eat Thai food, go to a play. There's wonderful city parks, and an Olympian can give your kids swim lessons here. It's a great place. I will say the city historically has made it kind of tough on football here. And I do think that the city itself got an up-close view of how football can also change the town, and they've really, really embraced it. So the amount of change that the successful football season has been a catalyst for, I don't think will be measured for several years. It's been a transformation.
Yeah, and you mentioned College Game Day. There was also Big Noon, Fox's Big Noon kickoff. And Kurt Cignetti was everywhere all the time. And it's just a constant commercial for Indiana University. So, people don't realize the value that just those things alone add and what they bring, because it's immense. It's immense to building the football program, but it's immense in other things like you talked about.
And I will say, I don't think Ray Lewis will mind me saying this. It's changed the way that we're able to recruit for every sport other than football. Frankly, when you're recruiting someone, you want to bring them here on a nice fall day. As great as basketball's environment has been, do you really want to bring the baseball recruit here January 22nd at 9 o'clock at night when you got sideways sleet falling on the ground? Like, a fall football Saturday is the perfect time to experience Bloomington. And Ray Lewis, who is arguably our most successful coach, Todd Yeagley and Drew Johansson would like to enter the chat there too. But for years, he would not recruit on football game days. He's like, the stadium's empty. The students are all out in the parking lot binge drinking, and I'm walking parents and students through that. And it just looks like losing to me. Now all those students are in the stadium itself. You're winning. It's full. It's fun. And I think a lot of our sports are able to recruit to it. So it's a massive boon for everything here.
Yeah, I thought about that a lot when they would bring basketball recruits in. It has to make an impression when they turn around and then they go to Auburn for a visit. It's just different in how it affects you, man. But it's lots and lots of positive things going on, man. It is. It seems like everything is on an upward trajectory going into a season where football is going to be great. You got a new football or basketball coach with a completely new staff, new team. And I know there's a lot of excitement there because of the unknowns, but I was reading yesterday, I think it was ESPN ranked Indiana's transfer class as like seventh in the country. So there's a lot of upside there, a lot of opportunity there. I've had several of the players on. They're all excited. And you've got guys that came in from all over, and it's similar to how Kurt Cignetti built his football team. Very similar. And there's a lot of similarities between Darren DeVries and Kurt Cignetti. They're very different people, but there's similarities in to what their mindset is.
Yeah, and it's not like I've broken down X's and O's with Coach DeVries yet at all. I can tell you that he's a normal dude. He's a thoughtful guy. He's easy to be around, but he is absolutely the boss, and I think all of that is important. He's not overwhelmed by the pressure of the job. He comes to baseball games here. He goes out to eat here in town, so he's kind of comfortable in the skin of a basketball coach here. One thing that is similar to Kurt Cignetti, and you know, Kurt Cignetti, like if you're a receiver, you're blocking downfield or you do not play. And Darren DeVries has types of players that work for him. I'm not going to get into the specifics, but I've heard stories by people I trust that have talked to him about certain people that people thought we should be recruiting. And he looked at their defensive highlight tape and it wasn't good enough. And so he said, I don't want them, no matter how many points per game that they score. And so he's got a way that he wants to play and he recruits to it. And I think people should feel good about the future of that sport as well. Now, I don't want there to be some sort of Kurt Cignetti test in year one that, you know, the college football playoff is like making the Final Four in year one in basketball. You know, that cannot be the expectation in year one of Darren DeVries. But I think we're going to play a coherent style of basketball that'll be really, really fun to watch. And it's going to be a very accessible program.
Yeah, I think they both need to be judged on their own merits without question, man. Anything else coming up exciting that I might have missed?
I can't think of anything. I'm really excited for the fall. I cannot wait for football season. And I think we got a lot of Olympic sports here that are going to have nice falls as well. So it's going to be a fun time at IU.
Yeah, soccer, always fun, man. Soccer is something the town really, really supports. They always have great crowds, whether it's from the students or if I used to hate soccer just because I didn't know anything about it. Just one of those typical people that grew up, screw soccer. Soccer's for guys that can't play football and this, that, and the other thing. But then my daughter started playing and I actually learned to understand it, have a great,
I think soccer's like baseball that it's, the more you understand it, the more you enjoy it.
Yes. You have to know what is going on. And when you do, you can be rather impressed. I assure you. And watching IU play, it's always fun because they're either winning or always in the mode of trying to win. So, very, very fortunate to have great coaches like Todd Yeagley around here for so long as well. I've told him personally, I think he's one of the greatest coaches that Indiana's ever had, and he is. Of course, his dad wasn't too bad himself.
Not bad at all.
Buddy, I appreciate you so much for taking the time, Jeremy. You have a great day, and we'll talk to you again, brother.
You got it, man. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Jeremy Gray joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Make sure you stop by in Nashville and visit our good friends at the Hard Truth Distilling Company, where you can pick up some sweet mash bourbon or rye, hard road rye. The sweet mash bourbon, by the way, voted top 50 bourbon of the century. Yeah, that's a big deal. You know, tomorrow on the dais is Dylan Send, Kyle Nedenrip, and Rick Bozich. Talk about a lot of things. Well, hey, how about the state of Kentucky? You got Louisville and Murray State. So someone said Kentucky's a baseball state earlier. I guess you got to give it to them for this year. But, man, I can't wait. Thank you so much to everybody. Appreciate everybody joining me on the show today. Mike DeCourcy and Jeremy Gray from IU. Most importantly, each and every one of you. Without you, we have no reason to be here. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.